Instacart is on a mission to have you not leave the couch this basketball season. Because between the pregame rituals and the postgame interviews, it can be difficult to find time for everything else. So let Instacart take care of your game day snacks or weekly restocks and get delivery in as fast as 30 minutes. Because we hear it's bad luck to be hungry on game day. So download the Instacart app today and enjoy $0 delivery fees on your first three orders. Service fees apply for three orders in 14 days. Excludes restaurants.
This season, let your shoes do the talking. Designer Shoe Warehouse is packed with fresh styles that speak to your whole vibe without saying a word. From cool sneakers that look good with everything to easy sandals you'll want to wear on repeat, ESW has you covered. Find a shoe for every you from the brands you love, like Birkenstock, Nike, Adidas, New Balance, and more. Head to your DSW store or visit DSW.com today.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
The bomb that shook Philadelphia. This is Move, 40 years later.
Just a gorgeous day right now.
It was like this on May 13th.
Yeah. And quiet. It's, you know,
very quiet.
Just far enough from the kind of main streets that you don't even really hear many cars. You hear dogs barking, birds chirping.
Yeah. A classic Philadelphia row houses with a nice architectural detail. And this gives you an idea of what it looked like before.
Now it is rather calm in this West Philadelphia neighborhood, but this has been, to be sure, a terrible day in the history of this city. This morning, Philadelphia police delivered their eviction ultimatum to the Move group. They rejected the opportunity to leave. A short time later, gunfire started. It lasted for about an hour and a half. Almost constant gunfire. A police officer up at the scene.
So it was about 5:30. A helicopter went overhead. I was down at the barricade. I didn't know what was going on, but people watching TV could see very clearly a satchel drop from the helicopter. And a short time later, there was an explosion.
When you were able to get down to the block and see the destruction and devastation, can you describe a bit of like what that looked like at that point?
I think I might have described it as looking like a mouth full of broken teeth because of the random wall that had not burned all the way down. Other than that, it was black. It was soot. All of this debris smelled awful. And when they came out the next day, I remember a guy at the barricade was talking about his jazz record collection. 45s and 78 RPM records that he'd accumulated over a lifetime. And it was gone. I felt it was sort of emblematic of the loss.
After police fired 10,000 rounds of ammunition at 6221 Osage Avenue without budging a single occupant, and after a day-long standoff as residents evacuated from the surrounding neighborhood waited to get back into their homes, and after the police bomb unit dropped C4 on the house, igniting a fire, and after city leaders watched the fire burn without trying to put it out, and after three blocks of houses burned to the ground and 11 people, including five children inside the Move house, died, at that point it became clear there never really had been a plan for evicting Move from Osage Avenue. All that was left by the end of May 13th were questions and a city clamoring for answers.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen.
Most of what we know about that day we learned from the Special Investigation Commission impaneled by Mayor Good shortly after May 13th. The commission hired a staff that combed through evidence all summer. They interviewed 600 witnesses. That fall, they spent a full month conducting hearings. The following March, they issued a report with 31 findings.
I don't think that people have studied it enough to really try and learn the lessons.
Bill Litton was the commission's chief counsel. He led witnesses through testimony that told the story clearly. For months in 1984 and 85, Mayor Wilson Good's administration allowed MOVE to terrorize their neighbors in a lovely community near Cobbs Creek without taking any action, until the pressure from the neighbors became so great, Good was forced to come up with a plan to end the situation quickly. He delegated that to his managing director, Leo Brooks, who delegated it to Police Commissioner Gregory Sambor, who consulted the head of the bomb squad, one of the decisions that to this day baffles Litton.
If you ask somebody in the bomb squad to come up with a solution, guess what their suggestion's going to be? A bomb.
But there were so many bad decisions, and they just seemed to snowball. Go back to May 12th. The plan, such as it was, called for getting the children out of harm's way while the neighborhood was being evacuated. But at the end of that day, children were still in the house. At that point, the commission found the operation should have been called off. So everything that happened the next day was outside the bounds of sound reasoning. And each decision was a mistake in itself. The gunfire, the explosives, the tear gas, the standoff, the bomb. But most of all, the decision to let the fire burn.
They used fire as a weapon with this stupid idea that they'd be able to control fire.
Litton believes the hearings elicited insights into handling volatile situations. For one, the need for novel thinking when dealing with a group of people who do not share common values with the larger community. The need for careful planning, clear communication, and alternatives.
There was no plan B. They didn't have any other option, they thought, other than to try and end it.
The hearings were broadcast gavel to gavel. They riveted Philadelphia and made news around the world. But Litton believes the lessons were lost to time.
They should be teaching this down at Quantico and at the Federal Law Enforcement Training Center down in Georgia as an example, and use this as a case study of what went wrong and try and work through what we might do in the future. And this will happen again. It's going to happen again, just like it happened in Waco. It's going to happen again. I wish that it weren't, but I'm fairly confident at one time it will. And I really fear that whoever's in charge at that point will make the same mistakes or many of the same mistakes because they won't have figured out how to deal with it in advance when lives are not at stake.
The Special Investigation Commission on MOVE answered a lot of factual questions about what happened on May 13th. They established a timeline, assigned responsibility for decisions and actions, made recommendations for what should happen next, but they couldn't crack the visceral questions, the ones Philadelphians have asked themselves over and over since that day. What were the men in charge of the operation thinking? What was going through their heads when they evacuated Osage Avenue but failed to remove the children from 6221? What did they think was going to happen when they let the fire burn? 40 years later, we still don't have satisfactory answers, and at this point, must accept we never will. Two of the men are dead, then Police Commissioner Gregory Sambor and Fire Commissioner William Richmond. Former Managing Director Leo Brooks is 92 and could not be reached despite multiple attempts. We did speak with former Mayor Wilson Good in the hope that with 40 years to reflect, he might help us understand that day in a new way. Here's part of that conversation. See what you think. Whose idea was it to drop C4 on the MOVE house?
I have not been able yet to have anyone who took responsibility for making that decision.
And then the next decision was to let the fire burn.
I think that was the most damaging decision that was made. And I cannot imagine a fire commissioner, a police commissioner, a management director with people in the house, with children in the house, then let the fire burn, and especially the two top people.
You've said you didn't realize they were letting the fire burn. You were not on the scene because of fears for your safety. So how did you feel the next day when 11 bodies were discovered and you realized that people, including children, had died?
I felt that the decisions made by the managing director and the police commissioner and the fire commissioner, without getting any permission from me to do anything of that nature, because actually the managing director was in charge of all of the departments, and so he has the authority to act without me. Although I said that I want to know what was going on, I assumed that he decided that he was not going to listen to anything else, and he was going to make the decision on the scene. And I called him a number of times to ask him what was going on, and he said, we got things under control.
And he was wrong.
He was absolutely wrong, and because he knew the instruction from me was that nothing is to be done that will put the children in harm's way.
Do you have any regrets about that day?
I have regrets that the people who were on the scene, I have a regret that they did not do a proper job in terms of what they should have done.
Is there anything else you'd like to say?
No, I don't want to add anything.
Wilson Good was reelected 2 years after the MOVE bombing. Brooks and Sambor resigned in 1985, but Richmond stayed on until 1988. The MOVE Commission reprimanded the medical examiner for his unprofessional treatment of the case. He, too, kept his job. The commission also recommended a grand jury investigate claims that police officers had fired at MOVE members trying to leave the house. Several officers took the Fifth Amendment against self-incrimination at the hearings. No one was ever charged.
If you don't know about flyer deals on Instacart, this message is for you. Flyer deals are like strolling through your favorite store looking for deals, but you're scrolling your phone and maybe you're in bed, because getting delivery doesn't mean you have to miss deals like you'd get at the store. Like the one creamer that doesn't make your stomach hurt, or the pasta sauce you can't not buy when it's on sale. So download the Instacart app, shop flyers, and never miss a deal on one of your favorites. Plus, get delivery in as fast as 30 minutes.
This season, let your shoes do the talking. Designer Shoe Warehouse is packed with fresh styles that speak to your whole vibe, without saying a word. From cool sneakers that look good with everything, to easy sandals you'll want to wear on repeat, DSW has you covered. Find a shoe for every you, from the brands you love, like Birkenstock, Nike, Adidas, New Balance, and more. Head to your DSW store or visit DSW.com today.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
You're listening to MOVE 40 years later from KYW News Radio.
The commission concluded two things. One, that by the early 1980s, MOVE had evolved into an authoritarian, violence-threatening cult. And two, that the residents of 6221 Osage Avenue were armed and dangerous. And they said they threatened and intimidated the neighborhood.
Did you consider the MOVE organization to be a terrorist group?
Absolutely. People who have killed one person, injured several others, people who threatened to blow up people's houses. I think that's a pretty adequate description of the word terrorist. In 78, I don't know if you recall, but...
Ed Rendell was Philadelphia's district attorney in 1978 when the city first clashed with MOVE in the Palatin Village neighborhood.
There was no sign that MOVE was particularly violent. The thought was they were kooky.
The city was getting repeated complaints from neighbors on the block about kids running around naked, garbage, some using buckets for their waste, livestock, and profanity blaring from a stereo at all hours.
Their neighbors, who are basically all African-American, wanted them either to clean it up and stop or to leave.
He says he tried to get them to move out peacefully.
Police and the city decided to take the people in by force, and that's when the MOVE members resisted. The firefights proceeded to happen, and Officer Rand was shot and killed.
9 MOVE members who denied firing any shots were convicted in Officer Ramp's killing. 3 officers were also captured on video beating Delbert Africa. A case against the trio was eventually tossed by a judge. The rest of the MOVE members relocated to Osage Avenue in the Cobbs Creek neighborhood.
And nobody heard much from them until 6 years later.
And again, problems with neighbors kicked up.
It was this loud speaker.
You'd hear a voice, "You motherfucker."
A neighbor attacked, bitten, garbage placed open to feed animals. I saw the kids eating out of the garbage can.
Again, city leaders were pressured to do something. The police commissioner called Rundell and said they'd found something extremely dangerous at the MOVE house.
8 or 10 big, 4-foot-high gasoline cans. They were keeping gasoline on the roof so they wouldn't have to pay for heating bills.
Rundell approved search and arrest warrants. Rundell says he thought the city would be able to get them out, surround the home for weeks if needed until they ran out of food and essentials, and then they'd be forced to come out.
But the city reacted in ways that were incomprehensible.
5 children and 6 adults were killed as Osage Avenue burned to the ground. Rundell says MOVE isn't blameless.
You can almost say if they were guilty of setting the table that led to the firefight.
And adds, the fault lies with the city.
And how they could have decided to risk dropping a bomb. They knew there were kids there. It was tragic.
For young Black teenagers in the United States, 1985 was a pivotal year. The Reagan administration was in full swing. Race relations between the Black community and law enforcement were tense at best, with incidents of police brutality and racial profiling leading to both distrust and fear. It was also the height of the war on drugs, which disproportionately targeted Black neighborhoods. Hip-hop was on the rise, and Black youth found a voice, with many expressing their realities, dreams, and experiences. That year, a 15-year-old Black teenager living on Osage Avenue in Philadelphia was just doing what many other kids his age were doing, going to school, playing sports, and navigating life, until March 13th, 1985.
What I vividly remember that day is all of us crowding around the television and watching it, everything unfold that day. You know, so you don't really know what is about to happen. You just know something is about to happen.
Baba Renfro, along with his family and everyone else on that block, had been evacuated. He was staying at his grandmother's house about 5 blocks away.
Because, you know, the city told us, don't worry about it, just bring an overnight bag. This will all be over, and you'll be able to come back to your home.
After the bomb was dropped on that home and the fire burned through the neighborhood, Baba's family did not allow him and his young siblings to view the ruins of their home as they tried to protect them from the trauma because the family lost everything.
I don't have a picture of myself under the age of 15.
He says to evacuate the block under false pretenses was unfathomable, and that the city had no respect or regard for the lives that were about to be upended, not to mention the 11 lives that were taken in that inferno. After the MOVE massacre, Baba Renfro's father, the block captain on Osage Avenue, led the community through the recovery.
My father, Gerald Wayne Renfro, for him to have the wherewithal, the gumption, the heart to lead a whole community forward during the aftermath was nothing short of God's miracle.
His father was lovingly known as the Lion of Osage for his never-back-down swagger. He was a former police officer who later went into construction, so he was able to navigate the needs of the community, as well as have an unofficial hand in inspecting the homes during the initial rebuild process.
And he noticed some iniquities, if you will, and he asked some questions of the people on site. And then once it was all completed, during the first rain, everyone on the north side of Osage Avenue, their basements were flooded. Our roofs were leaking.
He says the shoddy construction just added insult to injury. His father was instrumental in bringing in the Army Corps of Engineers, which after conducting inspections quickly learned that the roofs had been installed backwards.
When your house is burned down, not your fault, the city of Philadelphia's fault at that, then when they are ready to put you nicely back into your home, they hired a subpar contractor to do the work.
After years of frustration, all of the homes were properly rebuilt with the necessary repairs, although Renfro feels the city was doing damage control. Another child growing up on the block at the time was Mike Africa Jr. Mike Africa Jr. has the fighting spirit of his mother, Debbie Africa. She was part of the Move 9, who were all convicted along with Mike Africa Sr. for their alleged involvement in the 1978 police shootout where Officer James Ramp was killed. They have always maintained their innocence. Debbie Africa was 8 months pregnant at the time. She hid her pregnancy from the police and gave birth to Mike Jr. in her prison cell on State Road. But that was before the Move bombing, which is a day seared in his memory.
Tell me what you remember about that day.
I remember smoke. I remember the sound of a bomb. I remember fire. And I remember wondering if anybody died, and if any, who, how many. I remember being confused, and I remember my family in tears and outraged.
Mike was just 6 years old when the bomb was dropped. He recalls the fear vividly because he knew the men and women in his family were fearless fighters and had no problem standing up to the police. But what would motivate a city to use C4 on a home in a residential neighborhood? Mike has his own take on that.
Frank Rizzo was the police commissioner and then the mayor of Philadelphia.
Rizzo was mayor from 1972 to 1980.
And he was one of the most racist people that the city and the country had ever seen. By 1970s, he was making statements saying that the police department in Philadelphia could invade Cuba and win.
Wars were waging on the streets in many black communities, and MOVE was formed in part to fight police brutality.
If you look at the reasons that the Black Panther Party and the Civil Rights Movement and the MOVE organization came into existence in the first place, it was because of police issues. It was because of housing issues. It was because of poverty issues. If you look at where we are now in this world, in this country, those things haven't changed.
Mike says his parents' generation and the elders that created MOVE may have done so with admirable intentions, but they should look at the decisions they made that helped lead to some of the issues with the neighborhood and the police.
They were warned, too. And some of the decisions they made weren't the greatest decisions. There's never a time when someone should drop a bomb. These people were not terrorists. They didn't kill anyone. But at the same time, my family didn't do a great job at conveying a message and moving in alignment with the other revolutionary organizations that had walked the path that they were at that point on.
40 years after the tragedy, Mike says there are many lessons to be learned and that the city of Philadelphia, in his opinion, hasn't learned any of them.
The city has learned how to cover up the mess they made. They learned how to avoid taking accountability for something that they did. They hand out a couple $1 million to multiple families, but they've yet to repatriate the remains of our family members. They have a lot of making up to do if they want to scratch the surface of repairing this harm.
You're listening to MOVE 40 Years Later from KYW News Radio.
Mike Africa Jr. is a legacy director for the Reclaim Osage Project. He has support in city council on making May 13th a holiday and for a memorial, which would be located at the rebuilt home at the site of the bombing. He managed to finally purchase the home after it was taken by the city via eminent domain and eventually sold after it had been turned into a police substation. But they don't own it outright.
When I bought the house, they wouldn't allow me to just have it and do what I want to do with it. They put stipulations on me saying that it couldn't be a museum, it couldn't be a memorial, it could be only a residential property. My goal is to pay it off so that those stipulations go away.
There's about $333,000 left to pay on the mortgage. There is a GoFundMe page that has raised over $22,000 since it was set up in 2022. He says the city can start to make amends by helping this get off the ground.
I would love for the city of Philadelphia to pick up the mortgage on our property. I would love for the city of Philadelphia to give us some support in that way. We didn't have a mortgage on the property when it was bombed, and we shouldn't have to deal with one now.
Mike Jr. is thankful for one police officer who crossed the blue line that day, James Burkhire, who pulled one of the children, Birdie Africa, from the inferno.
I'm sorry that the other police didn't feel the need to go get the other kids. I'm sorry that he was the only one to do that. I'm sorry that he was threatened after he done that. I'm sorry that other officers wrote on his locker, "N***er lover," for that.
Kristen Johansson spoke with James Burkhire, who reflects on that day and the lasting impact it has had on his life.
It was probably the worst day of Philadelphia history.
This is James Berghire, a former Philadelphia police officer.
A lot of officers were ashamed after that day.
Berghire says he and Mike Africa Jr. have spoken a few times.
We have respect for one another. There's things that we agreed on, and there's some things that we don't agree on.
Berghire testified at the commission alongside his partner, Tom Mueller.
Out of the right side, as I'm looking down, do I see Birdie? The way I described it, looked like he literally came through the fire. He got, I believe, 1 foot, maybe two, I don't know, on the bottom of the concrete wall where the fence meets. But Birdie fell back. He went back. And I remember he didn't get a chance to put his hands down to break his fall. The impression I was left with, he landed square on his head.
Did he appear to be unconscious?
That's the impression I was left with. To be honest with you, I was scared to death. Right. I just didn't want to let that kid lay there like that. Sure.
So after Birdie had fell off the wall and he was unconscious in the concrete.
Officer Mueller was standing to my left.
So I gave my shotgun to Tommy Mueller, my partner.
I said, Tommy, here, take my shotgun. I said, I'm going to go get the kid. Officer Mueller stated that
he said,
be careful,
it could be a trap. He said, I'll stay here.
I'll cover you.
But in essence, what he was saying was, I'm going to stay here with no cover and no concealment for as long as it takes for you to go get that kid.
With my right hand, I scooped him underneath his left arm. As far as what I remember him saying, don't shoot me, don't shoot me. He then started to say to me that I'm hungry. I want something to eat. I'm hungry.
Berghire says, like many officers that day, he tried to wrap his mind around what happened. And sometimes, even now, 40 years later, it's difficult.
I'll try the rest of my life to try to explain what it was like to be there that day, but I'll probably never succeed. But that doesn't mean I won't stop trying. I remember going home, like, I think it was a day and a half later, and laying on a ball field smoking cigarettes, trying to figure out what happened. And I don't even really understand the magnitude at that point.
He was one of the first Philadelphia police officers who left the department after being diagnosed with post-traumatic stress disorder.
I carry guilt. You could probably sense a crack in my voice now that those children died. And I was so close and didn't know. And neighbors losing everything, the frustration they went through.
Jim Berghire says what happened May 13th of 1985 altered so many lives.
When I'll read something in the paper, an event that's related to MOVE, whether it be the unfortunate situation with the University of Pennsylvania and the five children that died with their bones, then I relive it. And then 40-year anniversary, I relive it. I feel horrible for the neighbors and the five children that died needlessly. At one time, I went to the cemetery and paid my respects for them. And I know in my faith that they're at peace in heaven.
The memory of watching the fire burn haunts Berghire.
We went out that day to try to give them an avenue of escape, then be in MOVE, and then come home. I never in my wildest dreams would ever thought that something like that would happen. It disrupted a lot of people's lives. All the guys I work with that day closest, we all went through a divorce. Unfortunately, one officer committed suicide. So there's a message here that to prevent things in the future, if some kid hears this, that he knows that there's cops out there that cared that day, that maybe that'll change their attitude. Try to meet you halfway. The world's screwed up right now. The way it's going down, things aren't working too well. We have to try something different here. And that's when I get into love your neighbor, love your enemy, and love yourself.
He's been back to the block where it all happened a few times, including once with his former partner and actor Sean Penn, who wanted to do a film about the MOVE bombing.
We went out and we walked around Osage Avenue, and that's when we met this woman next door. You know, she came out of the back of the house I was in that day. And I said, do you live here? She said, yes, I do. Can I help you? I said, I was a police officer that day. I said, I'm really sorry for what happened to you. Well, she started crying. My wife hugged her. She started crying. I started crying. And she said, nobody's ever said that. Nobody's personally ever apologized. Very emotional moment.
Berghire has hope for healing, but he says it has to start with recognizing what happened. And it starts with the stories being told.
So I always tell her that the story is the children and the neighbors. 61 homes were destroyed and 250 people lost everything. And five children died needlessly. I still say the same thing. That all happened and not enough people cared.
MOVE, 40 Years Later, was produced by Sabrina Boyd-Circa with reporters Pat Loeb, Kristen Johansson, and Raquel Williams. Our production assistant was Vanita Mwangi. Audio from the MOVE Commission came from Temple University. You can hear this full special at kywnewsradio.com.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Podcasting isn't just evolving. It's having a full-blown identity crisis. I'm Allison Marino, host of What's a Podcast? The Revolution Redefined, a new series that pulls back the curtain on the forces shaping the medium now and what that means for all of us who love podcasts. I'm really excited to share the official trailer where you'll hear from some of the biggest names in the space. Ira Glass, Leo Laporte, Guy Raz, Hernan Lopez, Lex Friedman, AJ Feliciano, Dan Granger, and yeah, me too. Here it is now.
I still want to kill the word podcast.
That's not just a hot take. It's a symptom of an identity crisis.
Big company run media, and people are trusting it less and less. It's really important that we're independent.
There's a handful of companies that control the vast majority of podcast inventory that have the vast majority of the gigantic shows.
We left radio behind for a reason. We wanted to get away from all the gatekeepers.
I don't know that you could do this as effectively in video.
Podcasting is at a crossroads. I've watched the industry swing from hype to consolidation to reinvention. But this time it's different. From the producers of the documentary Age of Audio, Oxford Road presents the Media Roundtable special series. What's a podcast? The Revolution Redefined.
All of us who work in the media, like, yeah, we got to run a business and like, we got to make a living and we got to sell our ads and we got to do all that. But we all got into it because like, I think most of us, like, it just gave us a feeling.
A three-part series where you'll hear the leading industry voices give their takes on what podcasting has become and where it's headed next. Teaming up with Oxford Road and Age of Audio director Sean Colone for this series was fun, but also kind of a wake-up call. If you love this medium as much as I do, you've got to listen to What's a Podcast? The Revolution Redefined. It's out now, wherever you get your podcasts.